Sarah Perlman, and she's currently the Director of Health and Community Education at Community Healthcare Network. She oversees all educational programming at the Community Healthcare Network, and she has over 20 years of experience in public health education. Her talk, because it's short, I'll read it. Using health literate materials to improve patient education. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know if I can speak because I'm still kind of processing what we just saw. That was so cool. It's interesting because going last, I was worried about, but I think it works really well. I want to talk a little bit more broadly about health literacy. And so rather than talking about a specific intervention, really thinking about the best practices of health literacy and how to integrate them into an organizational structure and how we did that at Community Healthcare Network. So Community Healthcare Network is a non-for-profit. It's a network of 11. It's a network of FQHCs. We have 11 centers throughout New York City. We have a wide range of healthcare services, primary care. We have adult and pediatric medicine. We have dental services. We have family planning. So we're really providing care to the most underserved communities of New York City. We have about 75,000 patients per year and over 500 employees. So the question is, how do you apply health literacy principles into every aspect of patient care? So rather than thinking about a very specific patient outcome, we're hoping that if we're applying those across the board, we're going to impact patient health significantly. So there's a couple of things that we have done. I'm really going to focus on patient education materials today, but just to get a sense of what it means to create a culture of health literacy at an organization as large as ours, really requires a lot of support from the leadership of the organization. In strategic planning, we had to identify real key change agents within our organization who were motivated and interested in promoting health literacy throughout the organization. Thinking about how to create a strategic plan that would not interfere with our operations, and both in terms of staff time and things like that, creating policies and procedures around those and making sure we're communicating them to staff, but also ensuring that staff is buying into the process as well. We, of course, do a lot of training. Every single staff member who was already in the organization was trained in health literacy. Some of them, most of them at that time, also by department, so those trainings could be specifically tailored to the kind of work that staff was doing. And when I say every staff member, I mean every staff member. That includes the front desk staff, that includes the janitors, that includes our providers, our nurses, our nutritionists, our educators. So in that training, we're specifically teaching them about the sort of negative health outcomes as a result of a lack of understanding, but also plain language, teach-back methods, and how to integrate them into their practice and actually convince them that doing that is going to actually, it's not going to increase the amount of time that they're spending with patients, which is the provider's major concern. And then lastly, and we do ongoing activities with them. They're trained annually as well as in ongoing activities at center staff meetings. And then lastly, sort of integrating this materials review practice across the board. When we first started, we went through every patient education material at every center. They're all different because they're using local community educational materials as well as sort of national materials from the CDC. We probably threw out 80% of them. That didn't pass the sort of standardized thing that we were doing. And I just want to give a little background about why we're doing it this way. So health literacy definitions, like the one here, are about the patient. right, their capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information to make appropriate health decisions. But we believe that health literacy is our responsibility. As professionals, it's our responsibility to communicate effectively so that community members can actually make informed decisions about their health and take the appropriate actions. The onus is on us rather than on the patient. We know this. We know that only 12% of Americans actually have a level of health literacy that's proficient to understand. And so the question is, when we're talking about medication instructions, insurance information and billing information, immunization records, the signage that we're using in our organizations, you have to look at all of these things and realize that what's happening to the other 88%? How can they manage their care? And so we wanted to look at all of these things. We changed the signage in all of our centers. But in terms of those patient education materials, it's a beast. So we started in 2011, and we're still going. when you look at just basic health information that's out there for the general public, it's very confusing. There are health numeracy issues with this particular nutrition label. How does the general public navigate these things? How does this matter for them in terms of their own health? And so these are the kinds of requirements that we're requiring of every single patient education material at Community Healthcare Network. And the thing is, you're not just talking about the handouts that you give. You're talking about medication instructions. You're talking about the registration forms when they're first walking in the door. How do they fill those out? Patient letters that they receive to remind them to come for their appointments. When we talk about patient non-compliance, we're really talking about health literacy. Patients aren't non-compliant because they don't care about their health. They're not compliant because they're not understanding and they're not able to use the information that we're giving to them. So every single material that we have, from the front desk to the printout from the EMR, which you might not have as much control over as you would like, follows this sample. We're getting rid of medical jargon and using plain language. We're writing at a sixth grade reading level. We're sticking to those meta messages and just making sure they're getting the information that they need. We're trying to make sure we have enough white space on the page using images that actually match the information that they're getting. And so we use tools. We're using Health Literacy Advisor. There's other software out there that you can use. And so it's very simple to sort of run the materials through the software, and you can it will demonstrate to you what the reading level is, and then you can pare it down. It shows you which words are too big, too many syllables, which ones to change, and so that you can get from a very simple or not so simple college reading level down to that sixth grade reading level very simply and very easily. So this would be an example of the material that we threw out. Since you have already talked about the CDC, I'll say it. This one comes from the CDC, right? Insurance company. Even worse. So the questions are: what are the main points? Like, are the messages clear? Are they making good use of the white space? Are they using font that's large enough to look at? Is there a clear message, even in the title? And I mean, we believe the answers are no, so we toss that one. And this is an example of what, so we're not reinventing the wheel with every single patient education material. We don't have to rewrite every single one. This is a campaign from the New York City DOH for PrEP, and it's very simple. It tells you, protect yourself from HIV every day. And then the very key messages: who can take it, how do you take it, and what else do you need to do to stay healthy? Three main messages. Same for the PEP. It's the same campaign, so I cheated. But So you have just your very basic information. There's a lot of HIV materials out there that talk about how it's transmitted, you know, what happens to your immune system. What do we need to do to protect ourselves to stay healthy? That's what we want to include in our patient education. And just another example of the tools that are out there. When I say you don't have to reinvent the wheel, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. This is, we're using, there are many out there, but this can be integrated within electronic medical record. This one in particular is CREAMS. We have lots of issues with some of those materials, so we do enhance them, and we do create new ones for the ones that don't exist. But basically, you know, there are software programs out there that you can integrate that will have the basic, you know, plain language already completed for you. So there are thousands of those that are available in multiple languages, and you don't have to sort of reinvent that wheel. On the other hand, there are lots of basic things that you do have to reinvent. This is our original consent form, registration form, rather. It's very difficult. Some of the language is at a very high reading level. Some of it is just not a lot of space. The font is very small. And with a very simple change, we're getting the same information that we have to collect, but we're making the language very clear, and we're making it easier to read, and we actually have, we're saving time because more patients are filling it out correctly, and they're not going up to the front desk with an incomplete registration form that they then need help to fill out. Same for consent forms. So some of the consent forms we had written ourselves, this is an example of that. The language obviously is very complicated. It doesn't necessarily have that much meaning. They don't understand the risks. And so we've changed that and made it simpler. And basically, we have seen that we're having fewer IUD removals, for example, as a result of just changing the form. And so we're giving patients information up front. A consent form is really a vital piece of information for patients to be able to give informed consent. They have to be able to understand what they're reading. I just want to say, like, we also have done probably 1,000 of our own patient education materials that we have completed in the last two to three years. It's a work in progress, but we have procedures in place where our staff is now submitting all of their needs to the health literacy team. Just to acknowledge Emily Briglia, who's our health literacy manager, and so she's the one sort of guiding us in this process. It's a really time-consuming, resource-heavy, although not as heavy as you would think, process. But it's really important. So are we going to look at very specific interventions? Yes, we're looking at our referrals process right now. Actually, I'm going to hit you later. But I would encourage thinking broadly about health literacy. And we want to always adhere to the basic principles of health literacy when you're designing or you're reviewing materials. Just because it's easy that someone else has done the work doesn't mean that it's going to benefit your community or your patients. Know your audience. Know what that meta message is. Make sure that you're using language and images that are appropriate to convey just the information that your patient needs. I guess this is a little self-serving, but when you're doing it, if you can really become a health literate organization, and it's not easy, but there are easy ways to start. But you're going to enhance your patient's learning, you're going to increase your appointment keeping, you're going to increase compliance with actual patient regimens, you're going to improve patient safety, removing barriers to access to care. All of these things, in turn, are going to impact your patient health outcomes. There's no way that it can't. We had a similar, I can't remember who was talking about it, I think it was the first speaker. We have on our referrals forms, which get spit out by an electronic medical record that we have no access to change. We asked patients, what are you looking at? Do you know what this is? And they didn't even know it was a referral form. 55% had no idea that they were supposed to actually go someplace for their referral. They don't know the appointment day. They don't know the time. They haven't a clue where the location is. So we're going to revise. We can't change. There are things you can't change. There are, even in the consent forms, some of those are national. Some of those are required. But you can put a cover letter onto those things, and you can really give your patients an explanation of what they're looking at in lots of different ways. So it's not just, oh, these are the things I can't change. It's how do I change everything to make it work? And so the first thing I would encourage you to do is assess the materials that you do have lying around. This is a really, talk about low-hanging fruit. You can go through your organization and really see they're going to be everywhere. Everywhere you look, you're going to find some brochure that someone mailed, and it was free, and so you put it in your waiting area, and your patients are not picking it up. Get rid of the things that aren't working. Identify the things that you need. Talk to your coworkers. Find some key stakeholders in your organizations that are really interested in making these improvements, and then take it up if you need to take it up, or take it down if you need to take it down. Implement changes in policies so that this is really impacting the entire organization rather than just a couple of people who are really gung-ho and want to make a difference. And then you can create a materials review committee. So at first, before we had any staffing for this project, we just create a committee. So we use those key stakeholders, and they reviewed all the materials and then decided what we could and could not use. And then, of course, you want to test the materials that you're creating with your audience. So always doing focus groups and making sure that your messages are really, really clear. And if you can get your hands on some special software, go for it. Eye tracking. That's new to me. I love it. So I think that's essentially it, but really thinking sort of more broadly instead of just one focused intervention about what are the changes you can make today at your organization to make sure that across the board patients are getting and receiving information that they can use. So, thank you. I mean, that's a really good question. I think that we were fortunate in the sense that our leadership was very open to supporting the initiative. And I think that you have to start at the top. And I don't know what the barriers are, but I guess some of those key stakeholders that are really interested in making a difference are going to have to figure out what are the barriers at your specific organization. Does the leadership feel like it's a financial investment that they don't want to make? Because it doesn't have to be. There are ways that you can at least start to make a difference, and I think that it happens over time. At least our experience was that over time, once you start to make the smaller changes that don't have a cost and don't cost staff time, we didn't talk about the training that the staff receives here, but when you're talking about training staff, and nursing and even the providers and every element of staff, they're saving time in the room. They're saving the time that they have to spend when the patient comes back because they didn't understand what they heard the first time around. They're really making an impact on chronic conditions. So I think you have to kind of target the leadership with those ideas and make sure at the start that you really hone in on the fact that it's not going to cost a lot of money. That would be a good argument. To answer the first question, the policies are fairly simple. One is that every new hire training has to complete within the first month of hire a health literacy training, no matter what their position is. The second is this materials review process. So the health literacy department, which is really a department of like two plus me, who's not as focused as they are, they work in collaboration with our marketing department so that every staff member has to submit every single document to go through the approval process. And if it's not approved, then we'll create something new for them. So in the beginning, I think there was a sort of misstep, which was like, no, we don't approve that. That's not health literate. You can't use it in your center. But we weren't offering anything to staff. Staff has needs too. And so that's where you have to sort of invest the resources. That's the bulk of what our two staff members are doing. They're creating these new materials where the other materials don't exist. In terms of a return on the investment, I mean, I think that that's a lot harder at this stage for us to kind of show. But as an FQHC who serves really the most underserved members of New York City, our patient population is primarily uninsured or underinsured. We're committed to their health, and I think once you have that leadership buy-in that this is really going to make a difference on patient health outcomes, and now we're just starting to do the evaluation processes to sort of show that. It's very difficult for us to do that because it wasn't a tailored intervention. So we're doing lots of things as an FQHC that we have to do to improve our patient outcomes. It's kind of hard to prove that it's specific to the health literacy. But I think that because of the staff buy-in process, there isn't a staff member, you know, particularly the providers, who doesn't stand up and talk about the importance of it. And so I think it's just sort of, I mean, we view it as the cost of business.